Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and for many years I did live radio. Then I transitioned to the podcast world where I feel I found my home. I love talking about spiritual formation, justice issues, and spiritual practices. Throw in the Enneagram, movies, and current events from time to time, and that's what you get on the podcast. I'm glad you've come along for the ride. Welcome to Faith Conversations. Welcome to Faith Conversations, everyone. I am delighted to have Michelle DeRussia back with me. She is an author, speaker, extraordinaire, and a wonderful conversationalist. I always love having her on the podcast. So, Michelle, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm always glad to be here.
And somehow there's always a lot to talk about.
Today
is no different. And what I have found to be great conversation, great catalysts for conversation are your monthly newsletters from the back patio, right? Or on the back patio.
Yeah.
And you did not write them for a while. You took some pandemic time off, like 6 months, right?
Yeah, I did. I decided it was right before the pandemic. I think my last newsletter was in February. So yeah, right before the pandemic, I decided, you know what? I need a little hiatus from this kind of creative work. So I said, I'm going to take 6 months off. And I wanted to work on a different writing project, which I did. It's not done yet, but that's what I was doing during that time. But then I really did miss the monthly newsletter writing. It's just fun. It's fun. And I connect well with readers that way. Like, I get a lot of responses.
Do you? Yeah. I can see that.
It's really nice.
Well, they're really well written. I've said this before on the podcast while talking with you. I'll get these from a variety of authors and people that put out some kind of a regular monthly thing. And a bunch of them I just delete. I don't read. I never, ever delete yours. They're always really good, really, and thought-provoking as well for me. What I find interesting, Michelle, though, is that you decided to take this hiatus before knowing about the pandemic.
I know.
And so enter pandemic, and I want to know what that looked like. Did you, dive into your work? Because a variety of people, it looked a variety of ways. And so let's talk a little bit about that. What did it look like for you?
Yeah, it looked like, okay, I now have all of this time that's opened up because my kids' activities were canceled, all their sports, all their orchestra stuff, everything that I was constantly running them around to, and then all of my social activities, and I'm not a super extraordinarily social person, but you know, book club and
sure,
a couple other things a month, that was all canceled.
What about work? And what did your job look like in this?
Yeah, we transitioned to working from home. So we did that from March until June. We went back to the office in June. So, and I have an hour commute each way. Thankfully, I only do that 3 days a week because I don't work full time. So that opened up, that alone was 6 additional hours a week, if you
right,
think three days, an hour each way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I dove into all of this new space and time with lots of goals and projects. So I literally painted the entire inside of my house. Oh my gosh.
I cannot even believe that. Unreal.
I know, I did that. And then I started practicing yoga for the first time in my life.
That's great.
And I embarked on this, it essentially is a book writing project. I decided I had an idea for a book and I thought I'm just going to start writing this book, even though I don't have a contract. I'd stepped out of all of that. So this was pure creative expression. And so I dove into that. So yeah, I was one of those people that just thought, oh my gosh, I'm totally going to make the most of this and, you know, turn lemons into lemonade and all that. And it did. It worked great for a while until it didn't work great after a certain amount of time.
Well, and I think a lot of people, some people had a slower start than I think a lot of people, there was a little bit more of that shock on the front end and we're sheltering in place and, oh my goodness, I've got to find some new rhythms and blah, 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 before the energy took over.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've heard from a lot of people, though, that they just kind of started cranking on work. I think it probably was personality dependent a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about the Enneagram. And yeah. So I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. So that's, you know, the achiever. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, what all new things can I achieve?
I can't let this get me down.
Right?
But one of the things that you said in your back patio letter was that was the first 3 months. And then there's the next 3 months, because we've been at this a little bit more now than 6 months. And my husband somewhere, I was asking him earlier today when he said this certain thing to me. And I think it was probably about 8 weeks ago when he said, I'm done. I'm really weary. The malaise has set in. And you wrote about that. You said, yeah, about 3 months in, halfway through this 6 month period here, that's what happened. And then, yeah. And then what did that look like, or what did that mean really for you?
Well, it didn't feel very good because exactly like your husband, I felt like, a sense of ennui and almost like despair kind of set in, because right, nothing had changed. And I kind of like burned through all of my projects, or a lot of them, and kind of burned myself out. Mm. And then I read that article about depleting our surge capacity. And yes. I can't remember the author.
Yeah, Tara Hale, Hell.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. In fact, I'm going to post that in the show notes, because it's called, she talks about, surge capacity depletion. That's the term.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating article, and I think people will really identify.
Yeah, it was really helpful to me to kind of put a term to it, a definition to it, and realize that it was a real thing. So surge capacity is a real thing, like in times of, say, like natural disaster or major trauma, where you kind of go into overdrive and you're in that survival kind of fix it mode. But it's intended to be pretty short-lived.
Short term. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic is different, because there's no end in sight. And even when the vaccine is released, you know, they're going to have to roll it out and prioritize different groups of people. And so who even knows how long it's going to be before, you know, pretty healthy, regular people end up with it. It could be a whole other year. And so, yeah, there's no end in sight. And so those of us who kind of went into surge capacity mode ended up depleting ourselves, because it's just going on and on, you know, there's no end.
Well, I loved how she described it. She said it's ambiguous loss. And goes into this whole thing about how to understand ambiguous loss. And one of the other things that I thought was interesting is that this whole, where we're sitting right now in the pandemic, it's harder for high achievers. I'm sure you read that and thought, I mean, that had to make you feel a little better.
Yeah, totally.
Because, you know, the more accustomed you are to solving problems, getting things done, having a routine, the harder it's going to be. Because none of that really is possible right now. And yeah, and that whole idea of no end in sight. Somewhere in the article, she mentioned like hurricanes and tornadoes in Florida. You know, thankfully we've not really been hit this season, but man, it's been a big year for storms and named storms, and that Louisiana, Alabama coast there, even Florida Panhandle has been hard hit and is... Yeah, it's just been terrible. But again, you know, you can plan for it. You go into that mode, and then the cleanup, and then, you know, it's behind you. It's something. It's you can put. It's tangible. I mean, this is just not. You can't. Nothing. We got nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, in the beginning, I think a lot of us were say, reaching out to our older neighbors or people who had health problems. Like, I would call my neighbor and say, I'm going to the grocery store. Do you need anything? And you know,
I wrote letters. Yeah. I wrote letters. I went through my entire list, my entire contacts list, and to find people that maybe I just hadn't connected with in a long time.
Stuff like that. We got creative and innovative, and we were caring, and we were loving our neighbors and doing all the right things. And then, like, we got burned out. Like, I never call my neighbor anymore. Like, yes. I mean, I call her, but yeah. I don't call her to say, do you need anything at the grocery store? I mean, we just all sort of, I don't know, moved beyond it or something, you know? And in the beginning, I was really creative with family time. And now I'm like, you know, my kids on their screen all the time, and I'm like, whatever, I don't even care. It's like, I've given up entirely.
So what do you think the next, are you moving into a next phase? Because we're post 6 months now. And does it still look the same? Just kind of,
Yeah, I mean,
are you back to being in the office?
Yeah, since June. So some ways that has brought a sense of somewhat normalcy to my life, because I am working in the office again. And even though the office is a little different, we wear masks and there's lots of cleaning protocols and everything, it does help to have that rhythm established again. But to be honest, Anita, it does feel kind of bleak to me. It does, you know, I think because winter's coming and I'm very outdoorsy and spent so much time this summer outside.
I follow you on Instagram. I've seen all those pretty prairie pictures.
I'm just so afraid because I don't, you know, we've been able to have like socially distant gatherings and my book club has met outside, and that's going to be hard. And so I have the pit of dread over that.
I think you and anyone that lives in a cold weather climate is really feeling it and starting to gear up, and the dread is just, you know, they can see it coming down onto them, that blanket. It hasn't quite hit yet, but the dread is there.
I started talking about the dread in August, and my husband had to tell me, honey, we're still in the midst of summer, so maybe don't start dreading winter while we're still in summer. But that I struggle with winter anyway, with seasonal affect disorder. Yeah. So this is just piling on the dread for me.
We moved to Florida 4 years ago, and Mike, my husband, had seasonal affective disorder, and it's gone. It's gone. So much more sun, and of course you can be outside all the time. And so I really want to be sensitive to people, because it's a, you know, smaller number of people that live in warmer climates that can be outside year round. And I know I'm already sensing how much of a difference that's going to make come winter time. And I was thinking about your husband. You wrote about him taking up pickleball, which is a big sport here in Florida.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's huge.
It's huge. So I got a kick out of that. And is he still playing? I wondered if he... So I also wondered this. Did he settle into a kind of malaise or not?
Not really. Not as much as me. Brad, my husband, is much more type B to my type A.
Yep.
His ancestry is Norwegian, so they have very like stoic sort of just grin and bear it and get through it.
Good person to be married to.
He's also Minnesotan, so he doesn't get the like winter dread that I get, because he's like, just deal with it, go outside, dress appropriately, there's no reason why you can't enjoy winter.
I should say, for people that don't know, you live in Nebraska now.
Yes, currently. I live in Nebraska. Yes.
So this has not hit him in the same way. And I think that's interesting, because not everyone in the same household feels the same way. I do think some of this is personality or type dependent. Do you know what his Enneagram number is?
We think he is a 5.
Ah.
So he's an English professor.
Of course. It doesn't bother him as much.
No, he's an introvert.
Oh, he's loving keeping all these people away.
Yep. Yeah. He's like, I don't really feel any different in my life. Because, you know, he's like, I've got my family here. and he still was able to work. They did online classes at the end of last semester, but he's back teaching in the classroom now, and so he's very happy with that. And yeah, he just has a lower bar for social expectations or social needs or whatever. So he's definitely been able to thrive better than I have.
Though I wrote a haiku early on in, I wrote a bunch of them early on in the pandemic, and this is for Brad. I'm okay. An introvert too, so it was for me. For an introvert, shelter in place is a treat until it isn't. So, because I think even the best introverts, eventually it's no longer a treat. We still need a little people infusion, but yes, can we deal with it a little bit better, a little easier? Yes.
Yes.
So interesting. How about your kids? And now I know, well, pandemic, you had one go off to college in the midst of this. What was that like?
Fraught with anxiety. He is in town here, so he's at University of Nebraska, Lincoln, and we really struggled with the decision of whether he should live in the dorm or live at home. Noah, he's our oldest, he is also very introverted. And so the reason we decided mostly that he should try living in the dorm is because we knew he would just retreat 100% inward if he was taking his classes online and living at home.
Sure.
And he would never be able to connect with anybody. And honestly, it's hard enough in the dorms because their social life is so limited right now.
Right.
So he's really has struggled to connect with people during his first semester. And even for an extreme introvert like Noah, he's actually said, like, I'm kind of lonely.
Aww.
I know. Yeah, he's come home a lot. I mean, he's so close by. He can ride his bike and drop in for a visit, which is so nice.
Brings
but
the laundry.
It's been hard. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Laundry. Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. All right. And then your other son is in high school, right?
Yes. Yeah. He's in high school, and he, we think, is a 7 on the Enneagram.
Okay.
So that's the enthusiast. And I think out of all of us, he's maybe struggled the most because he's highly social.
Yep.
And loves to be busy and loves to do fun things.
Yep.
And so his whole summer was very limited.
Oh.
He's back in school. They're doing like a kind of half and half. So he's remote learning a couple days a week and then in school, in classroom a couple days a week. Okay. And it kind of alternates 2 and 3. So that's helped, actually, that he's been able to. And he's on the tennis team, and tennis is a perfect sport.
Yes, it is.
Social
right
distancing.
Now.
Mm-hmm. So we don't have to worry quite as much about, you know, something like football or soccer where there'd be more contact. So it's been good for him to get back into a little bit of a social life again.
What's it been like for the high school? I realize they're doing a hybrid model, but have they had some positive cases, and how have teachers and students handled all that?
Yeah, they've had a few positive cases at Rowan's High School. Not many, surprisingly few, which is great. The schools are doing pretty well. I mean, they're very good. Vigilant about the mask wearing.
Yeah, I wondered.
And the distancing as much as they can. So the schools have done well. The university where Noah is has not done well. They have had a lot of cases.
Well, a whole lot less control there.
Yeah.
You know, the older you get, the less control, the more individual humans will do what they will do and not listen to adults or the rules or whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's too bad. I've been paying attention to colleges around the country, and I have seen some, you know, other instances as well. But your prayer is that the cases are not life threatening. You know, that's the thing. Because it's different for everyone that gets it, you're sitting there going, okay, I don't want to get it, because what if mine is a life-ending case?
I know.
Unknown.
Yeah.
Or life-altering with with damage to your lungs that you,
right.
with repercussions that you deal with from here on out. You just don't know if that will be you.
Yeah. We actually worry less about Noah getting it than Noah bringing it home to Brad and me, because we're not super young. I mean, I'm 50, Brad's 55, so we're not really high risk, but we're not, it's not like we're 20 either. Yeah. So yeah, that's sort of been our biggest concern, was not so much his health, mm-hmm. but that he'll bring it home.
So for some, we'll get sick. For somebody listening, you know, before you send the email saying, just trust God. Well, you know, you've got to take personal responsibility in there too. It's this interesting mix, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's hard. So my parents are both still living. They live in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen them. I actually went home right before the pandemic.
No,
it was
kidding.
Like first week in March, because my mom had broken her hip. So I wanted to visit with her in person.
Absolutely.
So I squeaked in that visit, thank goodness, because of course I haven't seen them since, and there is no plan in the future to see them. And, you know, my dad just desperately wants to connect with us in person. And so he called me recently and said he's got this great idea, and they're going to rent an RV and they're going to come and park it in our driveway. And I had to say, Dad, that's just not a good idea. Not because we, you know, don't want you here, but because with Noah coming back and forth to school and so many cases at the university, again, I wouldn't be worried about Noah, but I would be so worried,
yes.
that he would give it to my parents.
Right.
So I said, you can't drive an RV all the way out here and then end up just having to talk to us through the window. Like,
right.
seriously, that is not worth it.
Right.
And that's the way it would be, because they wouldn't be able to come into our house. We wouldn't be able to sit down and have dinner together in the dining room. So
it would be more frustrating than not.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. He was so disappointed, but he understood. Aww. Yeah, that's. Yeah. That's the reality. And my dad has COPD, so he's high risk.
Super high risk.
I know. Yeah.
I think that's the hardest thing. My mom has heart issues, and I've been going to the grocery store for her. And I took her to an outdoor restaurant on the water yesterday. It was her first time. She's been, you know, out, rides her bike and does distanced water aerobics in the community pool where she lives. But it was her first time out at a restaurant, and you know, she's like a kid in a candy store.
Yes.
You're just stir crazy. And so Mike and I have done some of that, where you're able to sit outside and you're distanced from other people and et cetera. I think you're just trying to make things work. You're trying to do what is safe to you. Our church actually is just beginning to meet. They have not yet had their first Sunday. It's happening this month. The month of October. So I don't know about your church or what that has looked like. And we're still trying to decide if we're going to go back. I don't think we're going back the first couple of Sundays. You want to sort of see what it looks like.
Our church did resume in-person services, but Brad and I, our family hasn't gone back. So they offer an online version.
We have that.
And an in-person version. And I mean, I guess we kind of fall on the more conservative end of the spectrum. You know, we're not going to the gym. We're not going to the church. We're not eating indoors at restaurants. We've eaten outside, like on a deck or a patio or something.
Yeah.
So we just decided this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what Mike and I have done. But again, I get that fear of winter coming, because we, at least here, will still be able to eat outside at restaurants. That option is going away for you and for so many. I know.
It is. I know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, so the spiritual director in me is always asking the question, you know, what is God's invitation to me in this? Which, speaking of spiritual direction, you have started in spirit to go to a spiritual director since we last talked.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, I've seen my client list grow and grow.
Have you? That's
yes.
really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that was one of my goals even before the pandemic started. So my 2020 goals, one of them was to expand or grow, I should say, my spiritual life. And I had been thinking about spiritual direction for a long time. So it felt like, okay, this is the moment.
Let's take the dive.
Yeah. So we just meet on Zoom. I've never even met. She's right here locally, but we've never met in person. Hopefully someday we will.
I love that. You can eventually meet in person. Not a single client of mine lives locally. All of my clients are on Zoom. They're all over the country.
Yeah. Well, it works. It really does.
It does.
I think it works fine.
Yeah. I'm grateful for that. But I was elated to see that you had started going to a spiritual director.
Yeah. And it's been very interesting and fruitful so far.
Nice. Yeah. And I noticed you said more on that in a later newsletter. So I'll wait to read more about that.
Yeah. I don't even really have thoughts on it yet because I haven't been doing it long enough. And as you know, it's kind of a long-term process.
I was just talking to somebody... Well, two women this past week. One has been with me for 3 years and one just came up on a year. And and finally, when you have a little bit more time behind you, you really can, well, your spiritual director for sure can look back and see that growth. Hopefully you can as well. It's a wonderful opportunity as the months go by to be able to notice what God is doing.
Yeah, yes.
Well, I'm excited for you about that new relationship.
Thank you.
Well, eventually we're going to talk about some book recommendations because you're always reading and you always have a lot of good ones, but we're going to transition to your October newsletter, The Back Patio, and you basically start out and say, I'm just going to say it straight up, this is not a fun, frivolous, lighthearted edition of The Back Patio. Our dog, Josie, died unexpectedly, and the loss has hit me like a locomotive. And you go on to talk about that specific loss and about what loss and grief look like in general. And I would love to talk about this. I mean, this, number one, it was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, how you reacted and responded, also equally unexpected for you.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about, tell us about Josie, first of all.
Yeah.
How old and how long you all had her?
She was only 9. She was a rescue dog, so we got her when she was 3.
Okay.
So we had her for 6 years. She was a part corgi, part beagle. We call her quirky and curmudgeonly because she just was like an old lady, an old soul. And she didn't really like anybody else, but she loved us fiercely. Mm. So, we loved her, and it was a shock because, I mean, I think she was probably ill for a long time, but
you didn't know it.
Yeah, we didn't know. And Josie was always a kind of low energy dog, so it was really hard to tell. But she just got really sick one night, and we had to bring her to the emergency vet. And it turned out she had extensive internal bleeding, and something was catastrophically wrong. And so there was no decision. We had to say goodbye to her. So it happened fast. So that was part of the shock. But I did not anticipate the level of grief that I experienced. And initially, both my husband and I felt guilty because we felt like this is an abnormal reaction. There are people who, even right now, we're in a pandemic. People are, 210,000 people have died, and people are losing people that they love, and other people have over time lost parents and siblings and spouses and children, and oh my gosh, why are we acting this way over a dog? We just could not get over it. It was absolutely devastating.
But pets are members of the family. How did you move beyond that? Because I'm sure you heard from friends and others that it actually is really natural to grieve deeply the loss of a pet.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, I I felt the grief so viscerally in my body, in my chest, in my gut. You couldn't deny it. You couldn't avoid it. You couldn't deny it. It was so real. Like it was almost like it was going to make itself known whether I wanted to acknowledge it or not, you know, whether I thought it was an important loss or not, or whether I felt society considered it important. It didn't matter. Like my body was telling me, this is important and you have to live it and experience it and acknowledge it. So I almost didn't have a choice. And then as I slowly started to just process that loss and the grief and just realizing, you know, what is it about a dog or a pet that is such a profound loss? And I think, you know, a lot of it is because they're so easy to love and it's such a pure, undiluted love, because, you know, human beings are complicated and we have lots of people that we love, but that love always comes with some amount of complication, right? It's never just pure, pure love. And that's what you get with a pet. You care for them. You do everything for them. It's like having a baby, you know? You feed them and walk them and let them out. And then they just give you their presence in return. And their presence is always there. And they're always there for you. Like you'll never, your pet will never say like, well, I don't really have time for you right now. Or, you know, I'm too exhausted or too drained to deal with you petting me. Or they'll always receive your love. So, yeah, I think it was the pureness of that love that helped me realize that it was important and it needed to be acknowledged. And then I just realized that our society doesn't really make space for that. We only give ourselves a certain amount of space for human loss, and it's barely enough. It's not even enough, usually. You know, you're expected to return to work after, what, 2 weeks? Or And for other kinds of losses, whether it's a pet or a job or a dream or whatever, like, there is no space for that kind of grief. And there's lots of different kinds of grief. And our society does not acknowledge it or make space for it.
And I think the other piece, you know, you just named these different kinds of griefs. There is not a scale like, oh, you can have this much grief for a pet. Oh, this much for a human. Oops, this much for a job. This no. We all feel things differently. Some people are deep feelers. Some not as much, though they're still feeling it. It's also dependent on our relationship to that person or thing that we have lost. I mean, there are so many variables. There is no way to rate how much time or space or energy we can give to a particular loss. It is what it is, and it is different for every person and every kind of loss.
Right. Yeah. It's a perfect description of the spectrum. I think I call it the spectrum of grief. And you don't know where you're going to land on that spectrum. You really can't control it.
You cannot. Yeah. I lost my dad a year ago, May. And yes, but I have struggled. I've not grieved a lot. And as you said, you know, human relationships, it was complicated, as human relationships are. And I'm an Enneagram 3, so I can feel other people's feelings really well. I can struggle sometimes to get in touch with my own. And so I've had like a intermittent kind of grief. It wasn't this thing that hit me and hit me hard. It was, oh, I just saw something that reminded me of him, you know, months later, and had this time of crying and like, and I would know, I'd go, oh, that's dad. You know, I would know when it hit, what it was and who it was for, that, you know. Yeah. And really, and when I say for him, I mean, it's really for us when we grieve, you know.
Yes.
Grieving about another person or an animal or whatever, but it's so much about us.
Yeah. Yeah. So Brad lost both of his parents 10 years ago. Mm. So we have walked through that season of grief, but he even said, this feels different. And in some ways it feels harder. And I think he felt tremendous guilt over that. Like, oh my gosh, what is the matter with me? Like, I'm sad over my dog. Yes. And so, yeah, he struggled with that for sure.
I totally get that. I also wanted to ask this. I don't think it's an insensitive question. I think it's one worth asking. Do you think that with the pandemic overlaying this experience, that also impacted how you felt?
For sure. Yeah.
There's no way of truly knowing, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're all experiencing griefs in this period that we recognize some of them. We don't recognize others yet at this point.
Yep.
And we'll maybe see in retrospect how the losses that we were experiencing and enduring.
And I'll let me add into this. It's not just the pandemic. The issues of racial unrest, you know, I haven't even added that into the picture. What's mm-hmm. going on in our country? We're moving toward an election that there is a whole lot of fear in a lot of people about that. You know, the listening to the news is a courageous act, right? Just before we recorded, there was a kidnap attempt that was thwarted by the Wolverine Watchmen, a militia group in Michigan, an attempt to kidnap the governor there that thankfully was thwarted thanks to the FBI and state and local police. I mean, what kind of times are we living in?
I know.
You know,
every day.
People like that this militia has been emboldened to even come up with such a
plot. Right. So I think it's cumulative grief, cumulative stress and anxiety. Some of it's kind of low level, just under the radar. Some of it's more overt. So we've got all that coming at us. And, you know, for me, Josie was a deep sense of comfort and stability.
Yes.
Combined with the fact that we had been home more, so we'd been spending more time with her.
Yes.
We had less going on in our lives, so we were
we
were putting more of our attention and energy towards her. And yeah, I mean, I sometimes, like I've said to a couple of friends, like, really? Like, whose dog dies during the pandemic? What a ripoff. Like, right when you need, you know, fur therapy.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, I feel kind of angry, you know, like, what? Really? That's really bad timing.
And I think just to underline what you just said, some of these are unnamed griefs we're experiencing now. I mean, some of us can name them, others, it's just happening to us and we're not even fully aware. But each new grief also points to past griefs that we may or may not have actually grieved. And so, you know, there's also this ripple effect that is in there as well.
Well, and I wondered that about Brad. In fact, we talked about it a little bit. Like, is this maybe a grief too for your parents that maybe wasn't fully expressed all those years ago, 10 years ago? It could be. It gets back to that article and ambiguous loss, right?
Yeah.
That's what this is. Like, some of these griefs and losses and experiences, like, we can't even recognize them. We're not even acknowledging them, but they're still there and they're still having a huge impact on our life. And I mean, we will see, not to be overly dramatic about this, but we will see the repercussions and ramifications of this pandemic and this season of racial unrest and political disaster for decades to come. I mean, it's going to manifest itself. It's actually interesting, you know, from a sociological, psychological, scientific point of view, it's actually interesting because this will have ramifications.
Far-reaching effects. But I would prefer to be looking back at it and not living through it.
I know.
I'd prefer to be dissecting it decades in the future and not living through it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I know. We'll get there.
One of the things that you said in your newsletter, that we're on a journey slowly making our way toward the day when we will be ready to welcome a new pet into our family to love. And that's its own journey too, an own decision. I've had friends that have had a new pet in their home 2 days later, which was like mind boggling to me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but it's been rare that I've had friends that have not eventually had a new pet somewhere down the road. So
I see that in our future, but it might take a little while.
Yes.
We're definitely not. It's only been 3 weeks. So
yes. Oh, wow.
We're not there yet. Yeah. I know.
Yep. Yeah. You are a great one to recommend books. And I know that there was a specific book that you read. I don't know if you started it before the loss of Josie or if you started after, but talk about Late Migrations.
Yeah, it's Late Migrations. The subtitle is A Natural History of Love and Loss by Margaret Rankle, who is a Tennessee writer. I think she was originally born and raised in Alabama. Now she lives in Tennessee. She also writes, I didn't know this until I read this book, but she writes an essay for the New York Times every Monday.
Really?
And they're really good. Yeah.
I did not know that.
I know. They're really good.
Okay.
So this is a book. It's a really interesting kind of unique format. She interweaves reflections of her family history. So her grandparents, even a little bit about her great grandparents, she weaves that together with her observations of her natural surroundings.
Okay.
So birds and plant life and what is happening in nature. And you know, loss is unavoidable, obviously, in our human relationships.
Right.
It's also unavoidable in nature. So the cycle birth
of life and
growth and loss. And so it's really a book about grief and loss. But there's so much, her writing is really, really beautiful. And her observations of nature, I mean, as we already talked about, I love to be outdoors and I love nature. So I love that kind of nature writing. And it just really, it plucked the strings that I needed right in this moment of both beauty, but also acknowledgement of the hard parts of life with loss and sorrow and grief.
Nice. I will post that also in the show notes for people that want to take a look at that. I am actually going to go back and take a look at your September newsletter as well. And just before we close, have you comment on a couple of books there that I've kind of put in my favorites stack for later.
Okay.
Evie Drake Starts Over.
Oh yeah, that's such a fun read. It's fiction. So just a really sweet but quirky novel. It's kind of romance, but quirky. It has a little bit of an edge to it.
Okay.
So a story about starting over in love. And yeah, I loved it. I think that was the author's first novel and so well done. The writing is really sharp, but poignant and just relatable. Like, you know, relationships, life, you just feel like, yeah, I get it. I know what you're talking about here.
Nice.
Just a really sweet story.
So I'm going to ask you about two more. Rules for Visiting.
Also a book that I enjoyed a lot, fiction. Also quirky. I'm sensing a theme here.
I love it.
So this one is about a young woman who is kind of an introvert. She's kind of a loner. And she decides in this age of social media and online connections that she is going to reconnect with some of these good friends from her earlier years, people that she's kind of lost touch with, not all together, but, you know, maybe has just been distanced from. And so it's just a novel about the importance of friendship and human connection, like face-to-face human connection, especially in this world of social media. Yeah. And she loves plants. She's a horticulturist. So again, that spoke to my kind of nature loving side, and it was fun, quirky, novel.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll post all these that we're mentioning here today. I should mention I'm in the middle of listening to Gilead by Marilyn Robinson. I don't know if you have read Marilyn.
I've
read Housekeeping before. So Gilead is just my second novel, and a musician friend, Fernando Ortega, gave it to me years ago. He said, you would like this. And I read a part of it and then stopped. And I decided to take it up, listening to it in audio format while I'm out riding my bike. And it has captured me. And I've got to believe you've read it just because it's got a prairie setting, actually.
Yeah. Gilead is one of my favorite books of all time.
I had another friend from Minnesota just tell me that this week. Tell me why for you.
It's so beautifully done. It's a very quiet book.
Yes.
It's very understated. But
let me just say I'm feeling the age-related themes because of my current age and where I'm living in Florida as well. I'm also feeling that way more deeply than when I tried to read it 15 years ago.
Yeah. I think it would resonate for a person who's kind of lived some life and walked through some hard experiences. It's written in the voice of an older minister, right?
Right.
And he's writing letters to, is he writing letters to his son?
I think he's writing them to his son. It's either his son or this other guy. I think it's his son. Yeah.
So he marries a younger woman. And he's a minister, but she's pretty much unchurched and irreligious and, you know, has her own story there. And then they have a child together, but, you know, there's kind of a vast age difference between them. And I don't know. It's just about, again, it's like the human story, you know, it's about humanity and love and loss and relationship and connection and regret, and so beautifully done, just really subtle.
Yeah.
But there are some sentences in that book that just stop me dead in my tracks.
So that's what makes me want to pull out my hard copy and be actually reading the physical copy, because I feel like there are things that I listen to that I want to underline. And of course, I have no idea where it is in the book.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the one
for sure,
thing
though,
you don't get.
It would be a beautiful book to listen to.
And it is.
I think it's not a coincidence that your musical friend recommended it, because I think there's a very lyrical quality to Robinson's writing. It's a book that you want to read slowly. It's not like a quick read. It's not a page turner. Not that much really happens in it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's more like character.
Yes.
I think a character study as opposed to plot driven.
Definitely.
But,
yeah.
Oh my goodness. I love that book so much.
I look at my books. I do an hour bike ride in the morning, and I have only 2 days left to my book. I look at it in days.
Yeah.
Like, this will take me X number of days. So I've only got 2 days left, and I think, oh, how is this going to end? Well, I'll know 2 days from now.
Yes, you will.
So interesting. All right. Last book you recommend. Journal of a Solitude by Mae Sarton.
Yeah.
Say something about that. Why and what that looks like, sounds, feels like.
So I must have seen that one on social media. Somebody must have mentioned it, and I picked it up. Mae Sarton was a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And when did she live? In the 20s, 30s, 40s, something like that.
Sounds good. Sounds right.
Yeah. So I mean, I read it in the winter. Well, it was like March, so it was the early days of the pandemic, and it just felt right to read it then. It's a very quiet book. It's about solitude. It's about a woman who spends basically a year in solitude, living in this big old rambly, creaky house. I don't know. It's a very interior book, so you kind of get into her head and you hear about things that she worries about or things that she's, you know, kind of obsessing over.
To me, this sounds like a good pandemic read.
It was a great pandemic read. Yeah, it definitely suited. I would think of this book as a winter read. It's a slow, quiet, understated book. It appealed to me as a writer because she's a writer.
She's a writer. Yeah.
So I liked getting into her head because she's, you know, she's working on books and writing projects and poems while she's keeping this journal.
Yeah.
So I found that I love to kind of get behind the scenes in a writer's head and just see like little inklings of their process. I find that really, really interesting and inspiring.
And it's,
so, yeah, I enjoyed that.
It's set in New Hampshire, just to let people know. And, you know, kind of underlying everything is her spiritual and artistic journey.
Yes.
Also, I did look up when she lived, 1912 to 1995. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, probably 40s.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do the math. You know, when she would have been writing a lot.
I'm terrible at dates.
More so, yeah,
thank you
me too.
For anyway. Refreshing my memory. Yeah, and it's also a very seasonal book, so it kind of traces the season. So she's living in this house during, you know, spring and winter. So she talks about, again, her garden. She's an avid gardener, flowers, and so yeah, you can see
that.
The theme in the books that I like. It's you know, deeply connected to nature, and but also sort of your interior life, like what's happening. It's happening in somebody's head. I like that a lot.
I think my takeaway, my main book takeaway from this conversation is late migrations. That's probably maybe where I'll head soon.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to hear what you think about that.
Yeah.
Because it's not your typical book. You know, some of the chapters are like a half a page. You know, I'm showing it to you.
Oh, yes, I see that.
So, yeah, it's definitely different.
You could almost read something like that devotionally.
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And I'm kind of rereading it right now because once I got my copy from a library and then I loved it so much, I bought a copy for Brad because I knew he would love it.
Okay.
But he's so busy with his schoolwork right now that I took it back and I'm rereading it. But I'm reading it more slowly now, just a couple pages at a time.
Nice.
And yeah, it's really beautiful.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, as always, a good conversation. Michelle, what are you, and this is a loaded question, but our final question, what are you hoping for as you do head toward winter? I mean, you know, we talked about that dread, but what are you hoping it could look like?
Well, the one thing that's great about winter is that it invites rest and it's a season of replenishment and coziness. So I have done a couple of things recently to help to prepare myself and make it feel like a season of coziness and warmth. So just small things, like I bought a candle with a scent that I love. And I bought a cozy pair of sweatpants, you know, like lounge pants that I can cozy up in.
Nice.
So yeah, I'm just going to try to make it like a hibernation period, a time to just rest again. Not that we haven't already been resting, because in some ways we have, but.
Yes and no. I don't think it's been true rest. Maybe some of the winter will actually give you true rest.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that the things that you mentioned are small things, because I think that's about all we can take in right now. And I think we can focus on doing small things that can help us as we move forward.
Yeah, I think just showing ourselves some tenderness and some self-compassion, asking ourselves, you know, what do I need to just help me thrive or at least survive in the best way possible this period, you know? And and so when I looked at the winter and I thought about, okay, how can I be my best self during this difficult season? I thought, okay, coziness, warmth, just taking care of myself. And so that's why, I looked at candle and cozy pants. I bought some nice smelling lotions, you know, that for my dry skin, and just very little, just tender touches for my, my mental health.
Well, maybe that sparked some of your thinking as you've heard Michelle say that. I would love to hear from you. You might have some comments and thoughts on some of what we've talked about today. So please feel free to email producer@anitalustria.com. Oh, I got some wonderful emails from you from my conversation with Melinda. And Melinda will be on again in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to read some of those emails and we'll talk about them. But again, anything that you resonated with, thoughts on today's podcast, shoot me an email, producer@anitalustria.com. Again, thanks so much, Michelle DeRussia. So good to have you here. And I'm going to post a link also in the show notes to your Back Patio newsletter. It's a great one to subscribe to. And so, folks, I highly recommend it. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, thanks, Anita. I always love our conversations and really enjoy catching up with you. So thanks for having me back.
Thank you. And to everyone else, keep the conversation going.